You're listening to All Marine Radio on the All Warrior Radio Network. S- 721 here on the West Coast, 1021 on the East Coast, where my guest joins me from, Jack Hoban. So, Jack, first of all, good morning. How are you?
Good morning.
All right. Well, first of all, I would be remiss in asking you the big, in not asking you the big story of the day is the director of the FBI was given his walking papers yesterday. Any thoughts on that?
Well, a little above my pay grade, but you know, it's so hard for the average Joe, you and me, even though we think of ourselves as well informed, to know all the details and all the background on this. And one thing that we both learned as Marines, who's ever in charge, whether we voted for him or not, whether we agree with him or not, we want them to succeed, and we're going to support the commander-in-chief. So that's about all we can do.
All right. Well said. Well, let's give everybody a thumbnail sketch on you for those people who haven't met you. Born and raised where?
I was born in Miami, Florida, but I was raised in New Jersey, and I lived down here at the Jersey Shore.
All right. How does the Marine Corps get on your radar as a young man?
Well, I was I went to Villanova University, and I was a mediocre student and needed a little direction in my life, and my dad challenged me to be a Marine, and he had a lot of respect for Marines. He, his mother, I believe, had a boarding house in Florida, and, Marines were stationed there, something to do with, pre-deployment to the Pacific, and, he just loved Marines. He actually went into the Coast Guard himself during the Korean War, but, he always had a, you know, special thought about Marines, and he challenged me to go, and, before you knew it, there I was with my long civilian haircut gone, and I was down in OCS and PLC, and it was a great, great decision.
Talk about so you decide that you're not going to make the Marine Corps a career. You get out of the Marine Corps. Tell us about your involvement in martial arts, and then ultimately crossing paths with Robert Humphrey.
Yeah, I had a kind of a plan. I was a series commander in San Diego, and then I had transitioned over to a day job after doing five or six series over there, and I was in facilities maintenance because I was a combat engineer. And you know, one of the things that I like to talk about now with one of my good friends, Joe Shisko, is mentoring in the Marine Corps, because I ended up as captain, and never occurred to me to realize that for a career Marine, combat engineer was probably not the way to go. This was, you know, I was kind of heading off into facilities maintenance or something like that. And there's nothing wrong with facilities maintenance. Mm-hmm. I did it for a year and a half, but that's not why I joined the Marine Corps. So I decided to go into the reserves and try to get into the transition to 03. Didn't quite work out, but I also had a side hobby. I was very interested in martial arts, and I was a martial arts instructor down in San Diego at the recruit training depot down there for many years, both on special services side for people that just like martial arts, and also you know, working with the recruits and the drill instructors there. But I had a lot of time on my hands, going from series commander, which was it wasn't as long a day as as a drill instructor, but it was a pretty long day, to basically a 7:30 to 16:30 day job. So, I was getting trouble at night and the usual kind of stuff that a young, kid happens in San Diego. So,
exactly.
I said, I better use my GI Bill, and go get an education, because I wanted to do a couple things. One, I was going to stay in the reserves. Number two, I was going to go to Japan and train martial arts with this teacher that I had met. And the third thing was I was going to get a job and go back to maybe New York and become a master of the universe or Leonardo DiCaprio. what's that movie anyway? That didn't quite work out either. But I did, in the course of my education, meet a teacher who did mentor me. And when I first met him, I was not impressed. I think the course was called Cross-Cultural Conflict Resolution Business. And it was, you know, Southern California. I was afraid that there was going to be a really touchy-feely thing with civilians trying to hug me. And, you know, I didn't know what to think of this course.
Right. Kind of creepy. You know what I mean? Kind of creepy.
Yeah. And it gets worse because in comes the teacher. He's this short little smiling gray-haired guy with a tweed jacket and, you know, elbow patches, and he starts to interview everybody in the class. Oh, why did you take this class? And who, you know, why are you here? And what's your background? And, you know, some mildly interesting people in the class, but I was clearly the only Marine, and I'm, you know, and it went on for like 2 hours of him just talking to everybody, and I'm, you know, rolling my eyes in the back of the classroom. Finally comes to me and he says, I bet you're a Marine. And I said, I bet you're Sherlock Holmes. No, I didn't say that, but I was by this time just about had it, you know. And I gave my pro forma, yes sir, and he goes, well, you know, I was a Marine too. I was a rifle platoon commander on Iwo Jima. I'm like, I may have prejudged this guy a little bit. And I'm laughing because, you know, far from what I thought he was, this guy was, to me, the ultimate warrior mentor. It turns out he had been a mentor to both the Kulaks and, you know, many of the commandants, and he was just, you know, after he had gotten on Iwo and he was shot, and he went to Harvard and taught at MIT, and he spent 30 years as a Cold Warrior behind the scenes doing cross-cultural conflict resolution, trying to keep together, you know, all of the allied allies that we had that were the bulwark against the spread of communism. So he spent all those years overseas, and I learned an inestimable amount from him about just dealing with cultures and differences and conflict. And he was a great boxer, too. He had been a professional boxer, and to the day he died, 70, 72, 73, he still thought he could take me, I'm telling you. he was not afraid of me.
I love that. And it's not a small part of the story. All right, talk to us about then you're okay, so we kind of see how your life sets up. Talk to us about, and again, be quick because I want to get to the issue, about the Marine Corps martial arts. I apologize, but I'll put the last interview we did up today as well, so people can reference that as well if they want to listen to a lot of Jack Hoban today. They'll certainly get their fill. But I want to get to a discussion with you on leadership at the point of confrontation, because the Marine Corps' highest visibility failures have all been paved by other leaders standing there with their hands in their pockets, failing to intervene. And I'm sure after an initial, hey, that's not cool, man, or hey, man, well, you shouldn't be doing that, which gets, hey, shut up and get out of here if you don't like it. So I want to get to that. But talk to us about, pivotal in all this, I think, is the Marine Corps Martial Arts Program. And what it's intended to do, and I don't know if it's actually, you know, again, maybe this is just, these are just marquee failures. Maybe there are a small number of them. Or maybe it's not hitting the intended mark. Maybe it's, you know, that Marines are confused about, hey, I'm a black belt, I'm a badass. And they're neglecting maybe the more important side of all of this, which is the ethical part of the warrior. The term ethical warrior. So talk to us about that whole program and what it's designed to do and your role in it.
Well, as I said, Humphrey had been a mentor of both the Kulaks, and in 1996, I guess it was, Commandant Kulak had had said that we were going to revamp the entire martial arts program. Too many people were getting hurt, and there was bullies coming out of it and this kind of thing. And it really wasn't sufficient in terms of the continuum of force that was required for low-intensity conflict. Not to sound melodramatic, but, you know, almost all of the martial arts techniques that we were teaching back in those days was kill, kill, kill.
Right.
And now, you know, we need a much wider range of continuum of force and conflict resolution, you know, how to talk to people, how to win hearts and minds, how to deal with prisoners, how to detain people or deal with agitated families because we were detaining their sons or all kinds of things. So we instituted a combat review board in Quantico, and people who had a reputation throughout the Corps, active duty and post-active duty, were brought in. We had all kinds of people, all the way back to World War II. And we discussed, you know, what skills a Marine might need in low-intensity conflict. And you're not going to believe this, but you get 20 or 30 martial arts guys in a room, and we did not all agree.
Really? There's a shock.
Yeah, a shock. Well, and to kind of oversimplify it, and again, this is my perspective on
sure.
it. There's a lot of folks there. It kind of started to break down into two camps. One camp was, hey, look, our mission is to teach martial arts, so we need to scour the world for the meanest, baddest, most effective hurting and killing arts there are, compile them, figure out how we would teach them to Marines. And then the people on the other side of the room go, yeah, well, you know, we all want that to be a tough, realistic program, but, you know, don't you think we should have, and this is where I made my mistake, Mike, shouldn't we have an ethical component in this to make sure that these kids don't learn this stuff and then go out in town to try it out, because you know, that's human nature. Oh, boy, I just learned all this cool fighting stuff today, and that guy just looked at me over here, and, you know, I'm going to try it out. And everybody looks at me and goes, oh, okay, so you're the ethics guy then. I go, wait. I don't want to be the ethics guy. I wanted to be the bayoneting guy if, you know, I thought that I was the most qualified for that. But, you know, I had opened my big mouth. And so I got, you know, this reputation of being the ethical guy. And went through 4 years of vetting the thing back and forth. And finally, in 2000, the commandant at that time, Jones, came and says, you know, I'm really into this martial arts stuff, and you guys need to kick this thing off. And, you know, in that meeting back in 1996, there was a fellow by the name of George Bristol, who many people may know.
Right.
He was a very competent martial artist and warrior. And when the conversation went towards, should we teach just martial arts or should we teach martial arts and the ethical, the character portion too, George said, we need both, gents. And nobody was going to argue with Bristol.
He's a big dude.
He's a big dude and very capable. And I think him stepping up to the plate like that in front of everyone was one of the reasons that the Commandant, General Jones, said, George, you're going to be the guy that kicks this thing off. So he became the first director.
Okay.
And Sergeant Major Penzack was involved with the curriculum, and Carlo Urso and a couple of folks. And Joe Shusko, I think, was the XO, the basic school at the same time. So those are some of the names that were involved. But, again, the focus became the physical part. And sure enough, people started getting hurt and this kind of thing, and using it for the wrong reasons out in town. And I remember George calling me one day, and he says, Jack, we need to talk about this. And, you know, what should we do? I said, well, we got to get the ethics part more in there. So I started teaching ethics classes, and you can imagine how that went over.
Right.
Because, you know, you have 7 hours of bayoneting and choking and stabbing, and then all of a sudden, you know, you get a lecture from some old fart on ethics. That didn't work. So over the course of time, particularly when Joe Shusko got there, it evolved to the point where the ethics part and the character piece really was the keystone of the program, delivered during the martial arts training. And that was kind of our breakthrough. When we found out that the best way to teach character and ethics was in a martial arts class rather than a classroom, that's when things started to change. And we're still digging out of, you know, some of the learning curve that started way back 15 years ago. But today, if you go to the Martial Arts Center of Excellence in Quantico, Virginia, and you watch one of these classes, you will be astounded that it's all about character and leadership and ethics, and that's when you're allowed to learn the martial arts stuff, once you have proven your character. And it's almost flip-flopped from, you know, the potato being the martial arts techniques and the plastic potato man hat being the ethics, to the character part is the potato, and all the different techniques are the plastic nose and the hat, the helmet and the ears and all that kind of stuff. I'm stealing General Jones's
lines. It's all right.
Potato head, Mr. Potato Head metaphor, but you get the idea that the character part now in the Marine Corps Martial Arts program is the foundation of it, and the martial arts come out of the character, because the martial arts are required, and this is gets to where we're going, and the reason you call me. The martial arts and the physical self-confidence we find is the key to having the moral courage. It connects right to the moral courage of saying something when you see something wrong.
All right.
And it's just so obvious that you won't even think of it, that people who are physically self-confident have more moral courage. Not all the time, but it works that way. If you want somebody to speak up, don't ask him to speak up if he's physically afraid or if he's physically intimidated. It's too hard. But if you give them the physical skills and the self-confidence, they're more likely to speak up when they see something wrong. So that physical courage seems to connect, we think, to moral courage.
Now, the picture I want everybody to get in their head is, do you remember the little dude in Tiananmen Square with the briefcase and the black pants and the white shirt standing in front of the tank?
Yeah.
If you remember him, there was not a whole lot of people standing near him. In fact, there's nobody else within the lens of the photograph. There's just that tank and that guy, whoever that guy was. Okay, there's not, and my point is to emphasize Jack's point, is there's not too many people like that. I will also tell you that, knowing the Humphrey family, they're all boxers, and to include the girls.
Oh, yeah.
And the component of that is exactly what Jack's talking about, is physical confidence. Whether you win the bout or lose the bout, your physical confidence, and as you said, hey, until he passed away, he thought he could take me. He was not afraid of me. That element of lack of fear, which is why you're on today, in the marquee leadership failures of the Marine Corps that we see now on a daily basis, every one of those has other leaders standing there, and I would say initially intervening. And I could probably get the statements to prove this, but I know notionally enough of this that when you're either putting somebody in the dryer or calling a recruit a terrorist repeatedly in front of his peers, so as to turn them against him and create a whole nother layer of stress that really recruits don't need because they're under enough stress, whether you're making a recruit lie in bleach, and that ultimately leads to him getting skin grafts, and that, or you're urinating on bodies, or you've observed intimate images of Marines being weaponized by their personal data, her name, her phone number, her address, and you say, hey man, that's not cool. The response tends to be a shut up, mind your own fucking business, and get out of here. Now, that takes us to leadership at the point of confrontation. Tell me about that. how are we failing so dramatically in that area? Or are these just anomalies, Jack, and we're doing well in that area? I'm curious about your thoughts. And then after that, I want to talk about, is this a specific part of this type of training that we need to focus on? That at the point of confrontation, will you lead? Or is it simply there's some people that can do it and there's some people that can't do it? So question one, why are we failing at the point of confrontation?
Well, again, it's always amazed me that Marines will have such physical courage in combat. It's awe-inspiring. They will run into a machine gun nest to accomplish a mission and protect their buddy. It's amazing. And then you talk to the same guy, and he's petrified that he's not going to get a job when he gets out, or he's petrified that they're not going to get a 1.3% pay raise, or he's petrified that he's not going to, be one of 10 on a fitness report. And it's just amazing that the physical courage does not always go over to moral courage or financial courage or political courage. It's amazing to me. But I know what it feels like because, in the civilian world, in the corporate world, I've been in that situation many times when you have, a narcissistic boss, or you're afraid that you're going to get fired and your family won't be able to eat if you don't go along with this, pad the sales figures and all of these other kind of things. So I understand it on one level, but on another level, it's very hard to understand. If you think something's wrong and you say that it's wrong, what are they going to do to you? They may fight you. Well, if you have physical self-confidence, then maybe I'll think twice about that. But you also have to understand that it may cost you your career, it may cost you a promotion, it may cost you some money, but how do you live with that afterwards? That's the thing that's so hard to understand at the moment. And I'm going to tell you, and one of the things that I want to say to all Marines out there, particularly ones that are thinking of getting out, there's no way that you can't succeed. You just have to have guts. There's no way you can. Anything you did in the Marine Corps is harder than what you're going to have to do in your civilian life. I just wanted to say that. But the second thing is...
Well, hold on. Let me interject one thing. The other thing that you're going to prevent, and I kind of draw a parallel to the way Mothers Against Drunk Driving changed kind of the way we look at grabbing somebody's keys off a bar and intervening and saying, you're not driving. Mm-hmm. There was a day when we never did that. Hey, you shouldn't drive. Hey, I'm fine. But they changed that. And really, if you look at these cases, by intervening, you're keeping guys from having their careers ended, guys getting dishonorable discharges, guys going to the brig for years. Guys going to the brig for years because you wouldn't stand up and be accountable when they needed you to be accountable. When they were being weak and stupid, you didn't stand up. And it seems to be a hallmark in every one of these high visibility cases that there were other Marines. The one in Hamdiya in Iraq with 3rd Battalion, 5th Marines, they got together as a squad and the sergeant told them what they were going to do, and later, it was relayed to me by a staff judge advocate. He had, after it was all coming unraveled, asked the corporal, why didn't you knew this was wrong, why didn't you intervene? Well, I did. I said I wasn't going to be part of it. And he looked at me and said, what are you, a fucking pussy? And he said, now, I fought with these guys in Fallujah. These guys are closer to me than close. Mm-hmm. And he said, and I couldn't go against them. And he said, I know now that I should have. But I couldn't at the time. Which to me is classic peer pressure in that tight organization. What do you do?
Well, this you hit the nail on the head back with TM, the square thing. There's certain people that will do that. the rest of the people have to be trained to do it. They have to be encouraged and led to do it. And I think that, you know, we're working against deep activistic inclinations, tribal inclinations, and where when the tribe is threatened or the tribe has to accomplish a mission, the easy way is to dehumanize the people that are outside the tribe, and that respect for them is not important or as important. And that's where this thing comes up with. You know, I see it in police training, where we do police training all of the time. You may know that my company, Resolution Group International, was brought in to retrain the Camden Police Department.
I do.
Camden was, they were the per capita most dangerous city in America. You would think Detroit or L.A. or someplace like that, but it was Camden, New Jersey. And the culture within the police department became so insular, us against them, that it was a war zone. And they had to actually disband the entire police department and start again, basically from scratch. And what they had to do was they had to create a different self-concept in the officers and a different culture within that police department. And they called on us from our experiences with McMap, how do you change a culture? And that's really what you're talking about, right? How do you overcome this cultural us, them, small tribe, blue wall of silence, camo wall of silence, whatever you want to call it. How do you change a culture? And it takes mentorship and leadership and training. And the bottom line is you cannot dehumanize anyone that's, even if they're not part of your tribe. Doesn't mean you have to agree with them, but you cannot dehumanize the enemy, if you will. And we've done that for generations. I was taught in the 1970s to dehumanize commies and gooks and zips and all this other kind of stuff, and you still hear the same things today about Hodges and ragheads and all this. And it seems on the outside it would be easier to accomplish the mission if you didn't have to think about these people as human beings, if you had to fight and kill them. But the literature does not bear that out. Back to Jonathan Shea's book, The Achilles in Vietnam, we know that one of the main causes of PTSD is dehumanizing other human beings. Now, that doesn't mean that we have to get touchy-feely with them or agree with their relative values or their cultural values or their behavioral values, but those are different than the value of life. And in all the circumstances that you mentioned, including, you know, these pictures up on the internet, we're talking about one tribe demonizing somebody that they feel that is not within their group and don't deserve respect. And we know that two things happen. One, disrespect breeds confrontation breeds conflict, conflict's gonna breed violence, and that's not what we want within the Marine Corps or within the country. And number two, that people that partake in it profoundly regret it afterwards. And that gets back to what you said about the kid that was torn because he had fought with these guys in Fallujah. He didn't want to be a quote-unquote snitch.
Right.
But now he profoundly regrets it. And I just don't think it's clear how dangerous it is not to be able to toggle out of our atavistic, tribal mentality and try to extend our protective self-concept to all others, including our enemies. And we do it. I mean, if one of our enemies is wounded, what do? We patch him up. Why? Because we all of a sudden agree with his behavior or agree with his culture? No. We do it because we protect life. and it goes right back to the 1776 values of inalienable right to life, even for our enemy, right? And that means we can't dehumanize. And it's the same thing with these pictures of these females and males, I'm assuming, on the internet. Somehow they've become marginalized, and they're not really human beings anymore, and we don't have to respect them. And all these chemicals in our brain are saying, yeah, I love the internet. You know, it gives me dopamine. I love looking at pornography. It gives me nice chemicals in my brain. But everybody, any rational and moral person regrets that afterwards. You know, like if, I want 2 ice cream sundaes because I can eat them. You know, you feel sick afterwards. I mean, it's this kind of discipline that's required, I think. But it starts with respect for all people, and as a Marine, to be a defender of all people, especially fellow Marines or fellow female Marines, that's a no-brainer. Right. But also, people that we know are going to get in trouble if they get caught, so we have to step up to the plate and protect them by telling them to stop whatever that behavior is, whether it's drinking and driving or cheating on their spouse or, you know, stealing gear or whatever it is, all the way to our enemies. And, you know, that begs the question, is it dangerous for Marines to be that much of a protector of all others, including our enemies? And the answer is, not if we're good. Not if we're the better tacticians, not if we have the better weapons and the better leadership. It's not harder. It's easier.
My guest on Wednesday is Jack Hoban. Jack, a former captain of the United States Marine Corps. He is a principal in the creation of the Marine Corps Martial Arts Program. He's a he's an author, The Ethical Warrior. You can find, all you have to do is do a quick search on it. You'll see, and he does extensive work not only with the Camden Police Department, but if you do a search on his name, you'll see all the different law enforcement agencies that he and his company have worked with. I'm going to read you. I'm curious about your thoughts on discipline in all of this. I think the Marine Corps struggles with discipline, and people will. I'm sure that'll raise issues among people that aren't close to the Marine Corps. Like, what? The Marine Corps, you know, it's all about discipline. Well, the guys that I have and got on this program tend to be guys with multiple combat tours. My friends are infantry guys, so I tend to go to them first. I'm going to read you something that one of them sent me yesterday. Quote. I am convinced that all the shit we made fun of, formations, inspections, maintaining uniforms, instant correction of infractions, not parade ground adherence to discipline, but instilling the habit in peacetime that we could rely upon in combat. So all those things that we thought were so chicken shit about the Marine Corps were instilling in us the habit of discipline. This is the way we do it. This is the Marine Corps way. And that is that those have been time tested. And all you have to do is go to look at the Marine Corps on the Korean Peninsula in the 1950s. Their adherence to discipline saved the Korean Peninsula because the army was in full flight. And all you have to do, there's a book called This Kind of War by T.R. Fehrenbach. Go ahead and read that and look at the difference between the two organizations. So Jack, talk to me about discipline. You know, it tends to be a word that, you know, you just talked about, or you just alluded to, but we don't want to embrace it as a culture. But yet the path to success, you know, can't be walked on until you go through the golden arches of discipline. And if you won't embrace it, it doesn't happen. So I'm curious, how does discipline relate to this culture of the ethical warrior, ultimately training somebody to stand up in those situations, and then these terrible things not happening? How does discipline fit into all that?
Well, you know, it's funny you should use that word. Maybe I used it first, but we constantly talk about physical discipline, right?
Right.
But there's ethical discipline too. Self-concept discipline. When dealing with police officers, and you can connect the dots really easy. You constantly see people whose behavior is unethical. And it wears on you to the point where you start to think that this person is not really a human being. He's a bag of shit.
Right.
And as soon as you cross that line, that's when we see the community relations break down, and you start to have the incidents all the way up to Ferguson and all these things. Those police officers got to the point where they lost their discipline to be able to separate in their mind the relative value of behavior from the absolute value of life. That's a discipline. And if you can keep that discipline, you are more resilient and you have less chance of creating an incident that will bring shame upon the organization. That's solely the honor of the Marine Corps. It's a discipline, and you have to beat it into your head. And we all do this. Let me ask you, do you have kids, right, Mike?
I do, four of them. Two of them are Marine officers.
Yeah. Did you always like their behavior?
Oh, God, no. Hell no.
Did you always agree with the way they acted and the way they spoke and things that they did?
Absolutely not.
Do you still love them?
Absolutely.
Okay. So you can do it.
Right.
You may never articulate it in your mind, but you can separate in your mind. You have a discipline that says, I can separate the relative value of their behavior, which sometimes is friggin' horrible, right?
Right.
From my absolute love for them and their lives. That's a discipline. The thing is, with us tribal folks, under stress, and as the tribe gets bigger, it's hard to maintain that discipline, particularly when it's not our family, or it's not a fellow Marine, or if it's an enemy, or if it's a person we just don't like. I mean, you see it all the time, you know, a guy goes into a Giant Stadium with a Jets jersey on and gets his ass kicked. Why? Because his relative value, he likes the Jets, all of a sudden means that you don't have to respect his life and you can beat him up. I mean, this is crazy, atavistic stuff that we have to have a discipline about. And it all comes down to it. You know, I may love you as a Marine and would fight with you and die for you, but if your behavior is not acceptable, I need to address it. Doesn't mean I don't like you anymore. That's why I don't like when people call Marines shitbags. Because that is the slippery slope that leads to the kind of incidents that bring shame to the Marine Corps. It's a discipline to say, this Marine is not up to standard. This recruit is not up to standard. Maybe even shouldn't be a Marine. But we cannot dehumanize him and disrespect his life. We have to deal with his relative behaviors. That's a discipline, Mike.
Wow, we can't say shitbag?
If you say shitbag, you better say it in a very loving, respectful way.
But he's our shitbag. Nobody else's shitbag. He's our shitbag. But your point is that begins the dehumanization of him, and he can be treated in a different way.
Yeah, that's why he's laying in, that's why he's in the washing machine, that's why he's laying in the bleach. That's not, he's a shitbag, but he's our shitbag and we love him. That's not that. That's right. Something else.
My guest this morning, Jack Hovan. Jack, I've got to take a quick break. Can you hang with us for maybe about another 15 more minutes?
If you can stand it, sure.
No, I'd love, let me just tell you. This is the kind of one of the things I love about All Marine Radio and what it's evolved into after almost a year, and you came on very early in that year, is these footnoted, pointed conversations about leadership, about culture, about discipline that we need to have in order, and again, not just in the Marine Corps culture, but in our broader culture in terms of how do we make it better? Because to me, the number one crisis the nation faces is a crisis of leadership. And I think these kind of discussions need to happen more. Need to have guys like you more involved in it, and certainly appreciate your time this morning. So thank you very much for doing this. We're going to take a quick break. More of All Marine Radio. Jack O'Ban, gracious enough to share his time with us here on a Wednesday morning. Don't touch that dial. More of this program next on the All Warrior Radio Network.
MilitaryByOwner.com is an excellent resource for any military family moving to a new area. We found a ton of homes to choose from and purchased a house 8 days later. This was the only site I used. Thanks, Military by Owner.
Are you PCSing? Do you need to find a home near a military base quickly? With over 45,000 listings and 15 years of experience helping military families find, sell, or rent their home near a military base, MilitaryByOwner.com can help. Military by Owner, proven and dependable.
My name is Juan Perez, Jr. I joined the military in 98. I commissioned as an officer. But I always had in mind the idea that I would go into the special operations community, particularly special forces. I was accepted to go into selection, and I attended on September 8th of 2001. As I was making my departure out of the military, there was that uncertainty. What do I do next? How do I repurpose my skills in a way that's not only meaningful to me, but also that provides for my family and provides an increase in our a way of living, a quality of life. The Global South Foundation has resources when it comes to anything from building resumes to how to relate to a CEO in conversation, how to basically, again, repurpose that which I had learned in a career in special operations, dealing at the strategic and operational level. How do I take that and then turn it towards entrepreneurial spirit into business development? And how do I translate that so somebody can see that value? And in doing so, I landed a magnificent and very rewarding career. I'm the VP of operations for an IT company called BuildSourced. What I say to veterans getting out, be bold. Be bold when you go to network. Go out to the Global South website, look at what events they have lined up, attend those events, you know, and participate. A lot of the events they hold, they're of key importance in this network. Go out there and engage, just like you would engage in a combat zone, you know, when you're networking there. With folks that don't share necessarily your language, your culture, or your background, and yet we still make it happen. How can we not make it happen here?
The Global Soft Foundation is a great partner of All Marine Radio. Find out more about them at globalsoftfoundation.org/Marines.
I'm good, but I have a story, and I don't know where to start.
I'm good, but I feel alone in a crowd.
I'm good. Past keeps coming back.
When the service member or veteran in your life says,
I'm good,
are you really listening?
I'm good, but I can't get out of bed.
I'm good, but I can't sleep.
I'm good, but I feel overwhelmed.
I'm good, but I don't feel safe.
I'm good, but I still have nightmares.
I'm good, but I don't need any help.
I'm good, but I don't feel anything anymore.
I'm good, but I can't live like this anymore.
I'm really not so good. But are you ready to listen?
Suicide prevention is everyone's responsibility. Listen to the veteran or service member in your life. If you are in crisis or know someone who is, call the Veterans Crisis Line and Military Crisis Line at 1-800-273-8255 and press 1 for free 24/7 confidential support.
All right, all you Mustangs, pay attention. The Marine Corps Mustang Association is looking for you. They're comprised of Marine Corps officers and officers of other military services who share a common background. They're a group of men and women who initially enlisted and served with distinction in the Marine Corps and the Marine Corps Reserve enlisted ranks. The term Mustang refers to a commissioned officer or a warrant officer who has risen from the enlisted ranks and owes its origin to the wild horse of the American plains and was a distortion of the Spanish term Mustango. The Marine Corps Mustang Association was founded by Captain Robert Richter, United States Marine Corps, in Philadelphia on November 10th, 1985, as a nonprofit veterans service organization. In its 33rd year of existence, the association continues to dedicate itself to the advocacy of professional development and encouragement of younger Marines, demonstrating a pathway for advancement and offering mentoring, advice, and camaraderie over the course of military service and civilian careers. The Marine Corps Mustang Association is looking for a few good Mustangs to join their association. Contact them via their website, MarineCorpsMustang.org. I say again, MarineCorpsMustang.org. Find them on Facebook. Go ahead and like them. Most importantly, join the organization so they can continue to do the great work that they do today.
This is U.S. Navy and Marine Corps veteran Montel Williams. During my 22 years of military service, I had the honor of working beside many brave service women. They are the fastest growing population of veterans, and they can be a great asset to your company. Women veterans are trained to take initiative, adapt to change, and they're quick to learn. If you're an employer or a woman veteran, call the U.S. Department of Labor at 866-487-2365 or visit careeronestop.org.
You're listening to All Marine Radio on the All Warrior Radio Network.
.806 on the West Coast on a Wednesday. Mike McNamara with you, and graciously hanging with us through the break is a great friend of All Marine Radio, Jack Hoban, and we're talking about things that he spent much of his life devoting it to, and that is discipline, the martial arts, teaching ethical leadership, teaching what it is to be an ethical warrior. And so he's gracious to spend some time with us this morning. Jack, let me read you an email. Hey, Mac, first of all, I love this conversation because it gets to the point that I think all of us scratch our heads when we look at leadership. And that is failing in such a dramatic way in an endeavor that you've been trained to spot and to intervene in. I'm curious as to Jack's thoughts relative to what Mike Musselman said yesterday on your program, and that is some people simply can't do it. They're not leaders. I don't care what is on their collar. They simply can't do it. Jack, that was a conversation we had yesterday. Your thoughts on that? We promote a lot of people. A lot of people are given that blood stripe that you rate when you're a corporal. You become part of the leadership of the Marine Corps. Yet they struggle with that stripe. They struggle with the responsibility that goes with us, and it's displayed for the nation when we go through these little bouts. Your thoughts, can everybody do it? Is it simply a fact that a lot of people can't?
Well, in my case, even though I was accepted into the Marine Corps as an officer, I was not a good leader. In fact, anybody that knew me in my early 20s probably shaking their heads right now that I would write a book on ethics. I mean, I don't know that I was a criminal, but I certainly was not a respectful person to people who I didn't think lived up to my expectations. And I was totally inconsistent in the way that I treated certain people. And there's really been two guys in my life that have, maybe three, that were such great leaders. Humphrey was one of them. And so that proves to me that leaders can be developed. And you hit the nail on the head. The thing with Humphrey was that he connected me with my physical martial arts stuff with the ethics. And he said, these are connected. The reason that you have these skills is to be a protector and defender of other people. That's what they're for. They're not for you, you know, to feel like you're a tough guy or to wear a black belt or to, you know, win a trophy or a medal or something like that. Those skills are to protect people. And I had to be taught that, Mike.
I don't think we get it like that, though, Jack, I have to say. Because what do you hear? He's a black belt. Now, I don't know why this just popped into my head. But mm-hmm. The concept of an Eagle Scout popped into my head. When you see a kid that's an Eagle Scout, mm-hmm. That's a different kid. I was never a scout, okay? My dad was in baseball, and so when they had the meeting that all the dads took their kids to become a Cub Scout, my dad was in Alabama or Texas playing baseball. And my mom asked me if I wanted her to take me. And I said, no, that's okay, Mom. Because I didn't want to go with my mom. Right? So I never became a scout. So fast forward, I come back from Iraq the first time. My former brother-in-law says, hey, man, would you like to come to Indianapolis and present a trophy to our Eagle Scout of the Year? I said, I'd be honored to. I'd love to. Turns out the trophy's named for Marine First Lieutenant killed in Vietnam. His mother was there, along with his brother. His mother at the time in her 80s. And so I read up on what it is to be an Eagle Scout, because I thought I should know that. And I couldn't believe this kid, the kid that I was going to present the trophy with, he raised the money, developed the plan for a child's playground in one of the Indiana state penitentiaries, and they built it. So there is a so in addition to tying knots, right, and doing other, you know, Boy Scout things, he delivered morally in a positive way that impacted his community. Do we need a component like that in order to be a black belt? Because I think, you know, when I see black belt, okay, he's a kung fu master, okay? He's done all the things it take to be a black belt. But is there another component that we're not putting enough emphasis on?
Well, my theory is this. If it wasn't for the change of McMap from focusing on the physical to focusing on the character, it'd be gone right now. It would be gone. Because, let's face it, we took Iwo Jima without McMap, okay? the martial arts stuff is not that important. The character part was the important part, but we found we couldn't teach character effectively in a PowerPoint, even with a charismatic teacher. We had to connect the dots between your moral courage and your character with your physical self-confidence. We had to connect those dots. And I know that there's some people that maybe experienced McMap way back in the beginning, in 2000, when we were still trying to figure out the way to go. And we had our problems. We had some beatdowns. We had some bullying and all this other kind of stuff. But I tell you what, if you go to, and I challenge you, I will pay you your travel expenses to go to Quantico and watch them do a martial art instructor trainer course. You will be flabbergasted at the focus on leadership and character. And I have heard it said, it sounds a little self-serving, but that MAIT course is the best leadership course in the Marine Corps. And it's a martial arts course. That's how closely the physical and the moral are connected in the human beings.
All right. So here's what I want to do. What I want to do is I want to bring different people on from around the Marine Corps. And I'm curious, is that what the guy in, you know, Kilo Company, 3rd Battalion, 1st Marines, is that what he's learning? Is the emphasis on that ethical, or when, before they start, are they hearing about an ethical dilemma and talking about it before they go ramp up the physical part of it? I'm curious, because you know, the Vatican can say whatever they want to say.
Right.
But if it doesn't reach me, they're just a gong clanging in the night, and they're irrelevant. So I'm curious to how it, you know, and what I'd like to do, if you don't mind, is arrange something where we get different guys from maybe a couple different guys on with you and talk about how it actually lays down. And is that what's going on? Because to me, it's so critical to, and again, the Marines United thing is just another case in point. And it's the same that we see at Paris Island. It's the same that we saw in Afghanistan with urinating on bodies, right? Mm-hmm. The failure of other leaders standing there to fight for what's not only the institution, but a comrade that's clearly going down the wrong path. Clearly. That failure to stand there with your hands in your pockets and somehow or other absolve yourself and say, well, you know, I raised it. You know, I told him it wasn't cool. Or, hey, man, you shouldn't be doing this. It absolved, so we acted, not.
Well, I have a guy that I've been privileged to mentor and train since he was 16 years old. He's now 30 years old. He's a company commander in MARSOC, multiple combat tours, you know, medals for valor and everything like that. He said to me that the most difficult thing he ever did in the Marine Corps, he was walking by a mud hut and he saw one of his, you know, alpha dog sergeants beating the crap out of a prisoner. He said the hardest thing I did in the Marine Corps was stop that. Tell that sergeant, get out of there. Leave him alone. He said that's the hardest thing he's done in the Marine Corps. Now, was he a guy that just was born to do that? Or was the fact that he bought into the ethical warrior concept and had the physical self-confidence and the martial arts skills and everything like that to maybe even stand up to the sergeant? Maybe not. Sergeant was a tough alpha male.
Right.
We don't know that. That's the tough part.
Right.
I mean, but there's enough research, there's enough guided research to know that there's a connection here. And we have enough anecdotal evidence. We're still waiting for the Marine Corps to sit there and go, well, wait a minute, let's see. If we get some good MAITs to train a Battalion A, and they go on leave, and they go into combat, blah, 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 and then we don't, to do that, that Battalion B does not have the same opportunity. At the end of it, do we have less incidents, less DUIs, less sexual harassment, less disciplinary problems, fewer injuries? Because now McMap is all about, it's almost hip to hip with this new force fitness for resiliency and injury prevention. All the more people get injured playing basketball in the Marine Corps than they get injured in Marine Corps martial arts program.
Well, that's a change because, you know, I got active duty in 2015. But when my last deployment to Afghanistan, the number one reason we'd medevac people was joint injuries, which was because we had so much upper body weight, flak jacket, ammunition, weapon, all that, jumping across canals because you didn't want to go through an unknown path because of the IED threat. Blowing out knees, number one reason we medevac. Behind that, IED strikes. And then number three, McMap injuries.
Well, you know, I just got to say, that concerns me. And to change the culture of the Marine... Okay, so let me just talk a little philosophically, okay? How we were trained in the 70s and 80s, and probably still today. The Marine Corps, you know, without someone melodramatic, you know, we think we're the biggest, baddest killers on the planet.
Always.
And if somebody comes up to you and says, okay, forget that self-concept, okay? It doesn't work. It creates PTSD. It causes you to be vulnerable to having incidents and atrocities and things like that. Your new self-concept there, Marine, is going to be ethical warrior. And the guy looks at you like, what are you kidding me?
Come on, man. Really?
What do you want me to be, you know?
Do I have to wear a dress or a tutu? What? Come on.
Right, you know? So, you know, for me to go up and try to convince somebody that they need, particularly when you're dealing with, you know, these folks that we're dealing with in the Middle East where they have no respect for human life outside of their own tribe, right?
Right.
We're supposed to be ethical to them. And we're going to be in combat. Well, you know, maybe I shouldn't shoot this guy. Is that ethical? I mean, it's a real concern, and we struggled with it. We agonized over it. Will our efforts to change the culture, okay, let's get the dirty C word out there, right?
Mm.
Change the culture from, you know, these tough Marine killers to ethical warriors, is that going to make Marines soft? Is it going to make them hesitant in combat? Is it going to put us at a tactical disadvantage to our enemies? And the question comes down to, should we train Marines to be killers or protectors? We thought about it. And then I got this idea, and I've shared this with you before, I think, Mike.
Yep.
I put a picture of a grizzly bear up on a slide in front of a bunch of Marines. And I said, Marines, okay, look at this picture. If you're walking through a forest and you see this killer grizzly, would you be afraid? And they all look at me like, what are you, crazy? Of course we'd be afraid. Killer grizzly? I said, okay, fair enough. And then I clicked the slide, and it turned out that that picture had been cropped, and it was actually a picture of a grizzly bear and two cubs. And I said, now, you're walking through a forest. Are you more scared or less scared? And they all said, well, we're more scared. And I go, why? Well, she's going to protect those. I said, what? She's going to protect, what? What did you just say? Well, she's going to protect those cubs. So, well, wait a minute, you're trying to tell me that you think that protectors are more dangerous than killers? And it was like, you know, I felt like Eminem, mic drop, you know. They all just looked at me and said, holy shit. Yeah, think about me protecting my fellow Marines, or think about me protecting my family. I'd be twice as dangerous, somebody threatened. Because I am the protector. I am the defender. Well, we're obviously, Mike, not completely successful in convincing everybody that they should alter or reclarify their self-concept
right.
as a protector. Because how does naked pictures of your fellow Marines protect them? I just don't understand how that protects them. And the point you made, how does letting a Marine urinate on a corpse, knowing that's going to end his career if he gets caught, protect that Marine? Forget about whether it's right to urinate or not. How does letting him do an action like that protect him?
And further, we know that the way worse things happen in combat is going down that path when you begin to do that. And I'll quote General Zinni. He went back to Vietnam as a company commander after an initial tour as an advisor, as lieutenant. He said he got there, and a Marine showed him a picture of scalps and ears that people from that company had. And he grabbed the picture. He says he ripped the picture up. He got the company together, and he said, this shit ends right now. And he said, you know what I sensed? He said, I didn't sense resentment. I sensed relief.
Relief? Relief. That's what Humphrey told me about Iwo Jima. He said when people stood up, it was like relief. So, you know, that's what we're saying, Marines. You know, it may feel difficult to get over that initial hump of, oh, I'm a snitch, or I'm not backing up my buddy, or I'm a tattletale, or whatever it is. But they'll thank you later. They'll thank you later if you do it.
Well, ultimately, you protected them.
Because you protect him, and that's your self-concept. It doesn't say, I do solemnly swear to go kill everybody. It says, I do solemnly swear to protect and defend. That's your oath. And if you get over the fact that it doesn't sound quite as cool as being a killer, you know, mad dog, but that is actually in nature, protectors and defenders are more dangerous than killers. Once you get over that hump, then you're going to be a better leader, and you're going to protect people that you want to be protected, and you're going to do the hard moral. You'll have the moral courage that connects directly with your physical courage of being a Marine.
One more question, and I'll let you go. I had Carl Marlanis on, who's a Navy Cross recipient in Vietnam, first lieutenant, infantry guy. Talks about living with the pain that he lived with, associated with killing, I want to say, two Vietnamese soldiers that, as he looked back, North Vietnamese soldiers that he didn't have to kill. He said, I think about it, you know, on a regular basis. I'm ashamed that I did it. I see their faces, and, you know, I live with that. And it starts with, being young and the dehumanization of your opponent, which allows you to go places that you really shouldn't go. He said, I wish I would have been more mature. I wish I would have known that stuff before I went. He said, I didn't. He said, I've learned in retrospect that was what I did, you know, was wrong. It was one of my worst moments as a human being, and even worse, I can't go back and fix it. So I have to live with it. And so what Jack has been talking to is this circle, and I believe this. Look, everybody can't be great at it, but everybody can get better at it. And as we get better at teaching it, at illustrating it, and going through this, and really rubbing people's faces in it, will you be up to it when it turns in your direction one day? Or will you shrink from it? What will you do? Will you protect your fellow Marines? Will you protect our corpsmen? Will you protect the institution? Will you protect the people that you fought against that are now in your care? Are you up to that? Because that's truly what it is to be a Marine. To be tough under extraordinarily difficult circumstances. That's what it is. It is not always about killing. Certainly that comes with the territory on occasion. But just as we're discriminating in killing, we're discriminating in the other parts of what we do. And you have to be up to that. And I think that's what you very, very succinctly connect for us today, Jack, is that physical prowess, that ethical leader, the dilemmas that you face, the difficulty of those dilemmas, but if you're not afraid, if you're willing to protect, if you're willing to engage intellectually as well as physically, that you can do this, and everybody can get better at it.
Well, I think I want to thank my mentors and leaders, because I was not good at it, but I'm getting better at it. And my best friend Joe Shusko, the guy is a pain in the ass because he is like Dudley Do Right, and you know, you can't even curse around the guy. And so I appreciate having these mentors and friends in my life who are better. They're better people than me, frankly. And because of them, Humphrey, and I know a guy, Vince D'Amelio. He probably doesn't even remember me, but he was a boss of mine in a civilian job. And Joe Shusko and folks like that. I mean, surround yourself with people like that. They will make you better. And every time that you don't do something that's regrettable, you know, it just enhances your life going forward. And if you do something that's unnecessary or regrettable, it will come back to haunt you. And there's things I did in my 20s that I thinking about them, I still cringe about them. But I wouldn't do them now because of leadership and mentoring. So go find yourself a mentor and surround yourself with good leaders. And don't put up with bad leadership. Quit the job. You'll get another job. Okay? You're a Marine. You're not going to starve to death, frankly. Trust me.
I love that. I love that message. Okay, I'm going to put together another little panel, and you're going to come back, and we're going to continue this discussion, because leadership at the point of confrontation. Don't back away from it. Don't be afraid to roll with somebody. You know, you may get a bloody nose, but you know what? There's guys who've spent years in the brig. For whether you want to talk about Paris Island, whether you want to talk about Iraq or Afghanistan, when there was people standing around that knew it was wrong, that intervened a little bit, but they shrank at the point of confrontation. And I think the message here is don't shrink. Get a bloody nose, get a black eye, get a cut cheek, but protect your comrades because you love them. Protect the institution that you gravitated to and who's, you know, that I think we all, you should see the emails I get, Jack, from people that listen to this program and talk about being reconnected to the values that they had as a young person by hearing guys like you come on, by hearing the different people that come on that are Marines and former Marines that talk about our culture and how beautiful it is. And I had a guy, an email, I want to say last week, that said, you know what, I lost my way. I started listening to you a few months ago, and it's one of the best parts of my days. I've quit my job. I've got a new one. and I'm out of the dark part of my life, and I'm on to a better place, and I just want to thank you. You know, and you read it, and you're like, holy shit.
Like, yeah.
Yeah, but it is the beauty of our culture, this unrelenting, wanting more, driven culture that is not about killing. It's not about killing. It's about honor. It's about duty. It's about your country. And I think we ought to link the term protecting, as you did, you know, to support and protect, which is in our oath. And so, so thanks for coming on this morning. What do you want to say that I haven't been smart enough to ask you this morning?
Well, nothing. But if you live in Northeast New Jersey, and you're a Marine veteran and you're interested in health care, we're hiring.
Okay.
Call me, 732-974-7582. And other than that, you know, anytime that I can help, Mac, you know, just give me a call.
No, I do know that. And what's the name of the company for people listening?
RMAC Financial Services.
A-R-M-A-C?
A-R-M-C Financial Services.
A-R-M-C,
call me directly.
Financial Services. All right. Yeah. I'm going to promote that, just so you know.
Okay, Jack, cool.
Thank you very much.
All right. Semper Fi, bro.
Semper Fi. That is Jack Homan. I love this job. More of Al-Marine Radio coming up next on a Wednesday edition, Hump Day. This hour brought to you by our friends at Battle Mug, the home of the one and only world-famous Battle Mug. Starts as a 10-pound block of aluminum. It's milled, machined, anodized, stamped with a serial number, and then adorned with Picatinny rails. Then it becomes ready for you to make your own. Anything that went on your rifle or pistol can go on your mug. Scope, laser, camera, light, throw a lid on it, you're ready for the field. If you're inside, take the lid off, throw a flag, an emblem on it, and you're set. Perfect for any commemorative event, farewell, promotion, retirement, birthday, anniversary, or get out of the doghouse gift. Battle Mug's the perfect, unique gift for somebody who's served in the military, in law enforcement, first responder. It looks bad, trust me. Check out their entire line of products, and there's a bunch of cool ones. At BattleMug.com, enter the promo code Marine for 15% off. Battle Mug's a veteran-owned and operated company. The product is made entirely in the United States. Again, my thanks to Jack Hoban for coming on. Awesome, awesome, awesome discussion. And again, we struggle with it. My buddy said, you know, we were talking about Marines thinking it's stupid to sew name tapes on their trousers. And his response was, it is stupid. But it's our rule, and we do it. And it's that discipline, along with the Irish penance, along with your room being clean, and the place you live being orderly. That is the discipline that instills the habit that translates to combat. When we lose that, we lose our identity as Marines, no matter what you sew on. If you, in fact, sew it on anymore. I thought that's pretty interesting. More of Al-Marine Radio coming up next. My thanks to Jack Hoban for coming on. Awesome stuff.
MilitaryByOwner.com is an excellent resource for any military family moving to a new area. We found a ton of homes to choose from and purchased a house 8 days later. This was the only site I used. Thanks, Military by Owner.
Are you PCSing? Do you need to find a home near a military base quickly? With over 45,000 listings and 15 years of experience helping military families find, sell, or rent their home near a military base, MilitaryByOwner.com can help. Military by Owner, proven and dependable.
My name is Juan Perez, Jr. I joined the military in 98. I commissioned as an officer. But I always had in mind the idea that I would go into the special operations community, particularly the special forces. I was accepted to go into selection, and I attended on September 8th of 2001. As I was making my departure of the military, there was that uncertainty. What do I do next? How do I repurpose my skills in a way that's not only meaningful to me, but also that provides for my family and provides an increase in our a way of living, a quality of life. The Global South Foundation has resources when it comes to anything from building resumes to how to relate to a CEO in conversation, how to basically, again, repurpose that which I had learned in a career in special operations, dealing at the strategic and operational level, how do I take that and then turn it towards entrepreneurial spirit into business development, and how do I translate that so somebody can see that value? And in doing so, I landed a magnificent and very rewarding career. I'm the VP of operations for an IT company called BuildSourced. What I say to veterans getting out, be bold when you go to network. Go out to the Global Soft website, look at what events they have lined up, attend those events, you know, and participate. A lot of the events they hold, they're of key importance in this network. Go out there and engage, just like you would engage in a combat zone, you know, when you're networking there with folks that don't share necessarily your language, your culture, or your background, and yet we still make it happen. How can we not make it happen here?
The Global Soft Foundation is a great partner of All Marine Radio. Find out more about them at globalsoftfoundation.org/Marines.
I'm good, but I have a story, and I don't know where to start.
I'm good, but I feel alone in a crowd.
I'm good, but the past keeps coming back.
When the service member or veteran in your life says,
I'm good.
Are you really listening?
I'm good, but I can't get out of bed.
I'm good, but I can't sleep.
I'm good, but I feel overwhelmed.
I'm good, but I don't feel safe.
I'm good, but I still have nightmares.
I'm good, but I don't need any help.
I'm good, but I don't feel anything anymore.
I'm good, but I can't live like this anymore.
I'm really not so good. But are you ready to listen?
Suicide prevention is everyone's responsibility. Listen to the veteran or service member in your life. If you are in crisis or know someone who is, call the Veterans Crisis Line and Military Crisis Line at 1-800-273-8255 and press 1 for free 24/7 confidential support.